was like 7. Like, I just bought 4 new mics, and I'm like, oh, crap, I need 2 more. I knew I should have bought the 8-pack.
I bet it was cheaper, too.
No, it wasn't cheaper. Anyways, I sound hot, Derek. I'm echoing really bad. I don't know what it is. Where are we? Now I'm off.
Gone.
Fabulous. What did we talk about last week?
Nothing.
Oh, yeah. Y'all are smart. Okay. Office chair, golf. Okay, so where are we then, other than John? I get that part.
3 years.
And the Bible.
John 3:16.
Yeah, not at 3:16.
John 3:18.
Not 18.
22.
Not 22.
47.
Do you have any idea? Okay, once again, a cute little hint. If you bring a Bible and a notebook and put notes in it, every time I ask this question, you'll know, just like that. John 4, nope.
No. John
5. Not 5.
John
6.
John 3. John 3:72.
Wow. All right, we're in chapter 3. What? 31, no. 22.
I said 22.
Yeah, I know, but you were just rattling off numbers. So here's the deal. This passage is funny to me, because this passage is like the greatest reflection of the church, basically, really in history, but of today that I think I've ever seen. Like, this is church. It's funny. Like, it makes me laugh.
It's like sarcastic funny, or it's like actually funny?
Yes.
It is not.
It is both. It is comical. It makes me laugh. And what makes me laugh is, we all say it's not comical or it's not sarcastic or whatever, only because when we read it, we find out that that's us. And so it's not funny. Like, it's funny until we find out that it's us. And then we're like, oh, crap.
It's funny, though. So it's funny.
Okay. So we're gonna start in 22. And we're just going to stop along the way as we go. And I'm going to walk this out. Verse 22, it says, then Jesus and his disciples left Jerusalem and went into the Judean countryside. Jesus spent some time with them there baptizing people. Now, because I've read ahead, Jesus, we'll find out in chapter 4, Jesus actually doesn't do the baptizing his disciples do, but that's just the wording in the book, okay? But, so yeah, Jesus is talking to Nicodemus. He leaves there and goes to Judean countryside. At this time, verse 23, John the Baptist was baptizing near Anenon, near Salem, because there was plenty of water there, and people kept coming to him for baptism. This was before John was thrown into prison. And here's where the church... By what?
It was in parentheses,
so
like...
Yeah, he was thrown into prison by a stripper.
By a stripper?
Mm-hmm. We'll get there. You got to be here, but we will get there. Okay. So, this is where the church comes in. Okay? Verse 25. A debate broke out between John's disciples and a certain Jew over ceremonial cleansing. So, John's disciples came to him and said, Rabbi, the man you met on the other side of the Jordan River, the one you identified as the Messiah, is also baptizing people. And everyone is going to him instead of coming to us. How is that the church?
Because stop it. They're not getting the money, etc.
I don't think there's any money here.
You know what I mean? Like,
they're not getting the recognition.
People aren't talking about.
Yeah, they're not getting the recognition. Is that not how we work?
That's how we work.
Yeah.
That's how the world
Yeah, that's how the world works. And here it is inside the church. And here's what my favorite part about this whole thing is. Here's John the Baptist, okay? We read back chapter 1, who says what about Jesus?
Messiah.
He's the Messiah. This is the Messiah. Duh, duh, duh. Here he is. Here he is. His disciples are there, yes? The Messiah goes down the road. Now his disciples come back to John and go, the Messiah is baptizing more people than we are. Really? Either way. Like, are we seriously mad that Jesus' church is growing faster than John's?
That's what they seem to be mad about.
That's a good thing.
Is it?
I mean, yeah.
Not
yeah. Yeah.
So why are we complaining?
Because we're complaining. They're complaining.
Okay, they're complaining. So then here's my thing. This is the last week of Fuse. This is the last week of Fuse. We're shutting down.
I hope that's a joke and we're starting up with
you. Because we're going to start going to Victory Road across the street. They're running about 1,000 kids.
I love Joe.
And there's no point in us continuing on. We can go over there.
Oh, and that's funny because Victory Baptist is like the old people's church.
No, that's the Methodist church next door. Yeah. People are complaining about what's going on here, so we'll just go over there.
I see what you're talking about. It's because of that bachelor party.
Oh.
Are you told your story about your bachelor party? I don't know.
What does my bachelor party have to do with us moving over there?
I don't know. People were like,
wait, it's
kind of
here. So
maybe
on Jesus
you
Christ
that,
himself,
know.
We're about, like, next week we're moving.
No. But that's the same thing. People come, they complain about what goes on here, so we'll just shut down and go over there. They've got a bigger youth group. They've got a bigger facility. They've got a nicer building. They've got a nicer whatever. So why do we keep doing what we're doing?
Because we're family, and we're doing it for Jesus.
But it's the same thing. This is how we function. We sit there. And guys, I'm not saying it's just you. I do it. I got a buddy of mine who's a youth pastor in Florida. He's making about 12 times the money I am. His church, okay, the church itself is in a mall. They bought a mall. His church has 3 movie theaters.
Wow.
And a bowling alley.
Wow.
They have Sunday school inside the old Dillard's that's been renovated into classrooms. They have a food court. Now, granted, the Chick-fil-A's and stuff have all moved out, but they have all that stuff already set up and ready to go. Oh, by the way, he's running about 2,500 kids. What'd you say? He's moving to Florida.
Is it because you're old?
He's moving to Florida. Nothing that I just told you has anything to do with Jesus whatsoever. But everybody in this room is going, I'm out of here. You didn't have to say it. I could see it on all your faces. You know how I know? Hold on. You know how I know this? You know how I know this? Because I'm thinking the same thing. I'm going, man, you know how many kids I could reach if I had a bowling alley? Hey, guys, we're doing bowling tonight. What's the cost, Aaron? It's free. You'd all be there. I mean, everybody would be there. Hey, guys, we're going to watch a movie tonight. How much is it, Aaron? It's free. Where is it at? The church. Oh, by the way, we're showing it on all 3 screens.
What's movie?
I don't know.
All of them.
But it's hard to not want these things. But like I said, nothing that I just told you had anything to do with Jesus. I didn't tell you, oh, by the way, of the 2,500 students, 1,000 of them received Christ this year. I didn't tell you anything like that. Now, I don't know those numbers. I just made that up, okay, so don't get all crazy. But we want to be the bigger, better, more amazing, more effective, whatever thing, just like John's disciples did. They wanted to be a part of what was bigger, and bigger is better, right?
No.
Sometimes.
If you have a big tumor, that's not better.
If you have a big tumor. Only Sarah. Only Sarah. It's our pride. It's hard. It's hard to... I just bought a new car, for those that don't know this. Anyway, for those... I drive down the road in my nice new car. It's not new. It's 13 years old. And I pull up next to Troy, and I'm going, dang, Troy's car is newer than mine. It's prettier. I wish I had a new truck. Literally, mine's like a month old, but Troy's is newer. It's just hard. It's the way we function. Emily goes to the mall, and she's like, I want that and that and that and that. And that's just when she's walking into the mall. She hadn't even gotten into the mall yet before she's already decided she wants 10 things. Who said that's me? Mariah. I want the plant outside the mall.
I want that
homeless man outside. Wow. Daddy, can we please get that homeless man? It's official. It's official. The person in the room with the most ADD is officially the youth pastor. Anyway. But yeah, so it's difficult. It's hard to not be here, but you would think, like you said, that as the church, we're a family, and we're good with what we have, where we're at, and whatever. Yes. Before that.
So many thoughts are running through our heads, you can't remember.
Yeah, it's okay. We'll let the hamster catch up in a minute, sir. So it's hard. I mean, we should be able to see it this way, but what we don't seem to see a lot of times is the whole church as a family. We don't seem to realize that old people church that's right there and Victory. And the Hispanic church, it's across the street, as a whole family.
No, but that's the old people church. Victory Baptist is the old people.
No.
I went in there and that man was so old, I thought he was about to cough and die. He was a preacher. He was like, it was so bad. He's so old.
Sarah. Okay. Okay. Either way. The fact of the matter is we don't see these things as a big family all the time. We get frustrated when they do something bigger than we did, or they have more attendance than we do, or they've got a bigger playground than we did. Like, I don't know if y'all have seen our playground outside. Hey, don't hate on that playground, okay?
Are you talking about the
I've never seen the playground.
It's right out there. So we have our playground, and then you go to that church there on Roof Snow by the car dealership, and theirs is 3 stories tall.
Inside.
Now, granted... For those of you that are thinking, hey, I want to go play on this, go right ahead. The hills. It's named the Tower of Babel. I don't want nothing to do with that place, okay? But the fact of the matter is it's still a 3-story playground.
I know it's huge. I used to go there. They have
For those that didn't get it, went right over your head. The Tower of Babel is a story in Genesis where they tried to build a tower up to God, and God got pissed off about it, so he changed their languages to everything. Yeah, it's like not a good thing. They tried to be cute and name it Tower of Babel for the kids that babble, you know, because they can't talk, but it didn't go over very well. So, yeah, I wouldn't get on that thing. But whole other thing, it's hard not to get jealous about these things, okay? Moving on, for my ADD takes us off anywhere else. Verse 27. John replied, "No one can receive anything unless God gives it from heaven." Here's where John shows up with his theology. What is theology?
God won. The
study of God. Wow. Wow. at least the hamster is stopping something from going from one ear to the other.
Yeah.
So, John's theology shows up and it says, God is sovereign. Period. God is all-powerful. God is completely in control. It's perfect theology. And John says, he's God, I'm not, and who am I to stand in the way? No one can receive anything unless God gives it from heaven. That's it. He continues in 28. You yourselves know how plainly I told you, I'm not the Messiah. I am only here to prepare the way for him. He's going back to chapter 1 again. Here's the Messiah. I'm not him. I'm here to prepare a way. I'm not worthy to tie his sandals, etc., etc. Okay? This is John understanding his proper calling. He says, my job is to point people to Christ. That's it. And he goes on to give us a metaphor because some of us can't understand what that means. He says, it is the bridegroom who marries the bride.
The bridegroom, what's that?
Essentially, take out bride. Every time it says bridegroom, that means groom. So the guy, okay? It is the groom who marries the bride. And the groom's friend is simply glad to stand with him and hear his vows. So, think about this for a minute. You're getting married. You are spending this. Okay. Girls, this is the day you've dreamt of for your entire life. You have scrapbooks of this. You have this dreams at night of this with the guy's face blurred. Or maybe it's not blurred. Maybe you know who it is. It's like Justin Timberlake or something. Okay. So. Wow. Okay. That's about enough of our public lust session. So, yeah. So, you've dreamt of this. You have the dress picked out, the place picked out, everything going on. The groom, let me tell you what we're doing. Oh my God, is this thing over yet? I just want to get to the honeymoon. I told you, let's be honest, I'm just saying. But no, that's really what's going on. So the best man in this time, it was his job to basically do everything that the maid of honor does. He ran everything. It was his job to make sure the wedding went off perfect. What John's saying here is, it would basically be like if the best man stood there the whole time going, my friend's getting married today and this sucks. Wish it was me getting married. I can't understand why he's getting married and I'm not. The whole time. Griping the entire time. You know, time to get up there. You know, the groomsmen walk the bridesmaids down. He's standing there. Should be me getting married. Not him. Can't believe he's getting married. Should be my day. Yeah. So then the groom walks up and, you know, the preacher's like, do you, so-and-so, take this woman? And he, like, pushes the groom out of the way. And he's like, my turn. No? No, it's saying it's the bridegroom's, or the best man, he's simply glad to stand with him and hear his vows. John wasn't bitter. He wasn't anger. He wasn't resentful. He understood his place and his calling. It was to be a messenger. Like, what would happen if I got a text on my phone right now that said, oh my goodness, the president's about to come on the screen. He's about to say something that's like super mega important. Everybody's got to watch it or you're all going to jail. So I flip over. We turn the TV on. You got the news announcer, right? In just seconds, we're going to hear from the President of the United States. So then next thing you know, the president comes on the screen and the news announcer's still standing there in front going, yep, this is the president. And like, they don't turn on the audio for the president and the news announcer's still standing there. Everybody's like, oh my goodness, shut up and move, right? That's what John's saying.
Standing up, I'll wait, and on these couple blocks until the phone, move! So one time there was this one, I
are you talking?
Move out of the way.
What are you talking about?
Sarah,
what are you talking about?
When you're walking down the hallway, and like, there's so many...
Okay, that's enough of that. Yes, Alex.
How did John get in jail?
You'll find out. Yeah, later in the book. Anyways, yes, it's irrelevant. No, but here's the deal. So the announcer still stands there. John is the announcer. When Jesus shows up, it's John's job to get out of the way, right? Yeah, the announcer needs to move. Nobody has. We don't care what he has to say anymore.
Then why do they have sports announcers?
Different job. That's probably pretty much true, too. Yeah. The best way to watch a football game is on mute because the announcers are half stupid anyways. But, so people who seek to be recognized for their achievements, to protect their territory and rights, to gain control of people and circumstances are usually the most miserable in life. Yet those who abide in Christ, let God control their lives, are thankful in all circumstances, and seek praise for Him instead of themselves are the ones that are filled with great joy. We can accept change in our lives a whole lot easier when our life revolves around Jesus. Like, it's real difficult if something happens and, you know, parents come home and like, hey, by the way, we're moving to Georgia. You're like, I don't want to leave my school and my friends and... But when your life revolves around Jesus, it's kind of one of these things where it's like, you know what? Obviously, God's got a bigger plan in mind here than I do, and I must submit to this and do what I'm told. I'm not saying it's easy, but it's a whole lot easier when your life revolves around Jesus instead of you. At some point, yes, you're like, I don't understand, but not understanding and submitting can go hand in hand. You know, when you're younger, your parents tell you don't touch the stove. You don't understand why, right? But you don't know that at the time. But you submit.
Nope.
Then you get burned. So, where do we go? All right, verse 30. This is John's final statement. He closes out right here. He must become greater and greater, and I must become less and less. I'll take your word for it. So, here's John's proper relationship with Jesus. He gets it. He gets his place. He understands, I have a proper theology. I understand my calling and what it is that I'm supposed to do in this place. And I also understand that it's about Jesus, not about me. And that's what he's trying to get them to understand. He tells them, you can't receive anything from God unless it comes from heaven. Okay? We need to be happy about what's going on. And he's got to increase and I've got to decrease. That's what he's telling his disciples. John understood that his job in life was not to be praised by people. His job in life was to be praised by God and lead people to him. And we hold the same place, unless you are Jesus. Now, if any of you in this room is Jesus, please stand up. I'll sit down and you can come teach. I'm good with that. Ethan, sit down. So, not even close, buddy. So, hey, chill. If he's Jesus, then I apologize, and we'll move on. But here's the deal. John did not seek his identity, personal value, or contentment based on how his circumstances compared with those of other people. He didn't want the newer truck. He was content with the truck that he had. He didn't want the bigger church, the nicer house, the nicer anything. He was content with where he sat because he understood his position and his calling.
But, okay, so, like, let me interject for just, four times.
If this is about pushing people out of the way, the answer is no.
No, it's not.
Okay.
So, like, so you say we have to be content with where we are, but what if we set goals?
Like, you can set goals, but there's a difference between being content and coveting to the point where that's all you begin to think about.
No, there's not.
It's not about wish I was here. It's I'm going to work to be here.
Still, like, you're saying that we have to be content, but, like, you're, like, earthly versus hurting my head. I don't get
or
it.
It's all of the above. Is it? No. So we have to live like John the Baptist and in like sackcloth and eat insects and stuff. So yeah. Maybe you should fix that. Yes.
Are we going to talk about how I got in jail today?
No. Move on past the jail.
Well, I
want
to know how it happened.
Read the book. You don't have to wait for me to teach it. Like, it's in here. Take your phone, okay, and Google John Baptist in jail. Not now. Okay, when you get home. And you can read it in here. And I think there's three versions of it, too. So. It's the same story.
One of them, he got his head cut off. What are you talking about now? Didn't he get his head cut off?
Yes. Because the queen asked for it.
Oh, yes, and give me John Baptist's plate on a silver platter.
Yes.
But that was him.
Can I teach now?
Can you answer you can't answer my question. My questions are weird.
That's a true statement. Okay. Christians should be content with God's will for them. Nothing more, nothing less. We should view our circumstances not through the eyes of the world, but from God's perspective. Each Christian is given different gifts, talents, and opportunities, but one thing applies to all of us. Christ must increase and we must decrease. Okay. We cannot be jealous of the fact that Aaron's standing here teaching and Derek's back there running sound and you're stuck sitting in that chair, because you have a different talent and a different gift than we do. Trust me, I am by no means jealous of you girls that sing up here. That's the only reason people show up every week. If I was up there, nobody's coming.
I would come, Aaron.
Yeah, no, you would not. You would run very quickly. At least she's honest. Okay, verse 31. He has come from above and is greater than anyone else. How many people's Bible has quotation marks at the beginning of verse 31?
I think mine.
Why do you not know? Are you not looking at it?
No.
Fired.
You know what quotation marks are?
No.
You said, I come to church, I'm good. Well, she said, is it?
I don't know. Well,
we
need to.
331. The irony in here is I'm pretty sure everybody except my wife and Troy have the exact same Bible. So everybody's hand should be up.
Oh, what? I said against that.
Anyway.
Wow, people
don't
have it because it wasn't in my bag.
You should fix it.
We have different
Bibles. Yeah, we have different Bibles.
I don't know about that one. Oh, okay, good point. Either way, so there's quotation marks at the beginning. This is where John the Baptist stops talking and John the author starts talking. Okay? No longer John the Baptist. So, it says, he has come from above and is greater than anyone else. This is basically the author summarizing all of chapter 3 and really probably chapters 1 through 3. Okay? He's come from above and is greater than anyone else. Who is he talking about?
Jesus.
Good catch. We are of the earth, and we speak of earthly things, but he has come from heaven and is greater than anyone else. He, Jesus, testifies about what he has seen and heard in heaven. He can actually tell us what heaven looks like because he's been there. But how few believe what he tells them? Anyone who accepts his testimony can affirm that God is true. For he is sent by God, he speaks God's words, for God gives him the Spirit without limit. The Father loves his Son and has put everything into his hands. Essentially, Jesus has the ability to speak from his experience. We do not. If somebody asked me, Aaron, tell me about heaven, what am I going to tell them?
What Jesus said in the Bible.
Yet when somebody said to Jesus, tell me about heaven, what did he say?
Streets are gold and gates are pearl.
Yeah, no.
Dang it.
He said what he saw. I can't tell you what I saw because I haven't been there. Jesus saw the beginning of time and we'll see the end of time. I've seen my cute little 33 years in like 2 months. Yay.
You're old.
Yeah, it sucks. Thanks.
My dad's
34. That's creepy.
My dad's 67.
That's seriously creepy that you could be my kid. Okay.
Ew.
I'm old. So, anyways, verse 36. And anyone who believes in God's Son has eternal life. Anyone who doesn't obey the Son will never experience eternal life, but remains under God's angry judgment. Back to kind of the thing we've been talking about from the beginning. Many people will turn around and call themselves Christians and not lead the lifestyle. What does it say? Anyone who doesn't obey the Son will never experience eternal life. It's real easy for, I'm a Christian, I'm good, I'm happy, that's all I need. Yet when the going gets tough and things get rough and it really comes down to it, they're not leading the life. They do whatever it is they want to do when they want to do it. Yes. Read the book. This one. My turn.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my turn. Okay. We embrace Christ with our lives by obeying him. We learn what to obey by reading the book. You want to know what to obey? You want to know what he says? Read the book. It's not enough to just show up here on Wednesday night and be like, hey, the old dude's talking, and I need to pay attention. You just said I was old like 3 minutes ago.
There's a difference
between old, like what Sarah described earlier, and you're old. So the key to this whole deal comes down, are we more concerned with our work or with Jesus' work? Are we truly good that if we hear something or see something inside another church or as a result of another church that directly affects the kingdom, that we're truly good with it, or are we jealous that it wasn't here or that we weren't a part of it?
I'm good with it. I don't care. You do you, B. I don't care. I know my dad all the time. He yells at me. Okay, Aaron.
Oh, thanks. All right. We'll hop off into small groups and we'll be done.